I'm a player, you's not a player. I've been coming around loving up on you. Of course you're into me, cause baby, I'm into you. You gotta see what, how I be. You gotta see why you're into me. Everybody wants some of what I got. I just don't know why you not.
Hello, America, Commonwealth nations, and other countries who might be listening to us. Welcome to another wonderful time of This Week in Mormons. We are delighted to be with you today to talk about Mormon issues and news and be self-indulgent with the way we use our time on this show, because if nothing else, This Week in Mormons is an exercise in mine and Al's vanity. And I am pleased with that. I am pleased with it.
Well, that's a great intro, Jeff. You really vamped us up.
Thank you.
I feel like people are going to be excited.
If you're a first-time listener, right now you'll say, they're not going to turn it off because they're not going to think, oh, these guys are jerks. They're going to think, wait a minute, I want to know more about this vanity. I want to.
What if they are really self-absorbed?
I want to see where they're going with
schmucks.
This. Yeah. Yeah. Nope. You got
Eric.
We've talked about the word.
I'll never stop using it. I'll never spell my name with a capital A, and I'll never stop saying the word schmuck. It's a great word.
Al has kind of his own paradigm. That's how he lives his life.
I was raised on Saturday Night Live clips of Dan Aykroyd saying, Jane, you ignorant slut. And so my mother uh-huh. approved of all of that. And as I continued to evolve into the man I am now, uh-huh. my vernacular has not left my roots, Jeff. I am not like some hippie Chicagoan that you might fraternize with.
Let me tell you a story about your parents' standards not necessarily taking you where you need to be. When I was a young lad, I was told this. Actually, I've got two quick stories. I was told by all my friends when I was young that I should watch the movie Bloodsport with Jean-Claude Van Damme. And they're like, Bloodsport is the coolest movie ever. And so I begged and I pleaded. And I think at that point in my life, we actually had like premium cable for some reason as a kid. So we had Showtime or something. And so Bloodsport was on. And I think I sat there watching through it. And I'm probably like 9, 10 maybe. And it was terrible. A 9-year-old shouldn't see Jean-Claude Van Damme basically kicking people's heads off.
That's the only rated R movie I've ever seen in my life. Actually.
So that one was like, oh, okay. But I was too young to even understand. I didn't even get like the rating system back then. I wasn't even thinking about it in that way. And then years later, my dad was hanging out with us after my parents divorced. And he'd always told us we needed to see this movie called Carnosaur. Now, so this was produced in the wake of the success of Jurassic Park, okay, in the mid-90s when everybody was trying to do stuff. So it's a direct-to-video film. Different type of plot, all about weird genetic mutations and dinosaurs and nonsense and stuff.
Yeah, Jurassic Park. I've seen it.
Totally different element. So my dad's always told us, like, it's so bad. And we always kind of loved doing, like, a stupid movie night with my father where we'd watch just bad B-movies. So he'd always talked it up. We're like, all right, we'll watch Carnosaur. Then he puts it on, and it's this gore fest, and there's sex scenes. And I'm like, what are you having me watch, Father? What is this?
Papa.
I think only a quarter of the way through the film, I think me and all of my siblings had abandoned my dad and left him alone in the living room to watch the movie. Because we were just like, we thought this was like some like
what
bad
are you
Jurassic
making
Park.
Me watch, Father?
Not some father, why are you making me watch these things? So what I'm the point of my story is, Al, is that just because your mother said and allowed you to watch Dan Aykroyd casting aspersions at fertile women.
You who hops from bed to bed quicker than a cheap ham radio.
Just because your mother said it was okay. How would your mother's fans react if they knew that she approved?
It's a tacit endorsement. I honestly feel like they know exactly what they're getting when they get mom.
Okay,
and I feel like that same approach has bled into my life, which has actually caused quite a bit of damage because that's my uh-huh. dating approach too. I'm like, I'll just show you what you're getting. We're not going to put any polish on this. And then I'm like, oh, we need some more context here.
Yeah,
I'm not actually a bad person. I just come off that way.
Yeah, Al does not understand that when you date, you actually kind of you don't divulge everything about yourself from the get-go. You have to let the crazy manifest itself as time goes on. Al just throws all the crazy out up there up front, basically saying, "Take it or leave it."
That's it. It's the good, the bad, and the ugly. Hey, guess what? You're gonna get 2 years into marriage. But me in a hoodie and jeans. So that's all you're getting on a date to the symphony now.
Well, okay. Having been married for almost 2 years now, this is what I've learned. This though is that the quirks manifest themselves, but it's different when you've been with someone for a long time because you kind of just slowly
There's context, yeah.
And you slowly work your way into those things, so they're not really an issue.
Do you have an example of crazy that your wife has manifested recently?
No, Danielle doesn't really manifest any crazy, but I will tell you this one that's been recent. So she's very picky about bottled water. Sorry, honey, I'm making fun of you. Bottled water. And she loves her good bottle. She loves good bottled water, and a lot of times tap water.
What is good bottled water? Like a Dasani or a Fuji?
I think just as long as it doesn't taste like tap water. And so a lot of people don't like tap water, and that's understandable. And that's something that I, of course, do not understand. Because I was raised in Southern California, which has the cleanest tap water in the nation, obviously. It's not full of lime or anything. And so it's one of those things where I think if that would have come out like at the beginning of our relationship, I'd be like, woman, what's wrong with you? Drink the tap water.
She's so picky.
But now who cares?
That's a red flag.
If she wants her bottled water, great. And I do stupid things as well. I'm sure we could fill a book with
them. Give me one of yours. What's one of your quirks that you've seen?
I don't know any. Maybe she can come in and tell us. Danielle.
Woman.
You want to come make fun of me on the show?
Tell me what I'm weird about.
She might be occupied right now, and it's not necessarily going to work.
She's doing work.
She's not at your beck and call.
Well,
Jeff.
I don't know about any of my quirks because I'm not very self-aware. I'm totally oblivious to my own shortcomings.
Ask her what a quirk is that she's found out since you got married that she didn't know before.
Okay, give me one sec. Danielle, what's a quirk about me that you've learned since I got married? Since we got married. You can come speak to the snowball if you want.
Well, you used to move your feet a lot.
I used to move my feet a lot.
Like,
that's gotten better.
That's gotten better. See, this is the great thing about women is women see quirks as opportunities to
get out of here. Go earn us some money.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Women see quirks as like the ability to improve their partner. And and men are like, no, this is my identity. This is who I am. I'm a feet mover with big hair.
I used to wiggle my feet a lot. It's true. Like I have
coasters. I never used coasters.
Coasters. I always used coasters on tables, and Danielle thought it was the weirdest thing ever. I think it's just part of civilization. But you know,
that is a weird like. That's weird for not a 50-year-old person to do.
Look, if your table is wood and you put a cold beverage on it, you'll leave a ring. Just use a coaster. Why is this so complicated for people? I don't understand.
No, Jeff, stop.
Well, okay, listen, you never even bought real furniture until you actually moved to Utah, so you don't have.
Jeff, a coaster just says, I'm pretentious.
My
cheap pressed wood furniture is so cheap that it can't handle a little coaster ring or a little wet ring that I've got to wipe off.
But sometimes, yeah, but if you don't do it right, it can ruin the table. Coasters are a wonderful thing. They should always be used in every setting. I think I actually initially got into coasters because I would get a drink from lunch or whatever, and just the condensation from it would kind of get on the table, and it would just bother me that there was just wet water on the table. Not for a ring, it was just, you know, it was annoying. So on the coaster, it would just collect on the coaster. And
all right, whatever. This is an interesting thing.
This is stupid. How is life for you? How is Salt Lake? You were in Houston. How's everything?
Yeah, Texas was good. Went down there for the big show, and I hate it more and more each year. It becomes less and less meaningful. I really do. It's just an exercise in like getting together with some friends. We had our own booth down there though for the first time.
Oh, cool.
We're working on a wholesale arm of what we do, and so we're building and building and building, which is what our mutual friend Ben is working on, which is actually kind of cool. And then so then I flew from there back here to Salt Lake, and it's kind of interesting, man. I'm closing up shop up here. I'm winding down. I still have another month that I'm here in Salt Lake City, but like I vacuum packed my love sack yesterday. Which those things are just amazing.
How small does that get when you vacuum pack it?
Dude, so it's an 8-foot love sack. It gets down to maybe like a 16-inch by 16-inch by 3.5-foot cube.
Okay.
It's pretty darn impressive, man. I was digging it as we were pulling it down. My poor Dyson little vacuum machine never got such a workout in this bachelor pad.
Oh, your poor Dyson, your poor $600 vacuum. Oh
no, I buy it on Wood. I paid $150 for it. No more for that than I would for a Eureka from Walmart. So don't patronize me.
We have a Shark. It's very nice.
that's the pricey one.
Costco, my friend. Costco. Good deals on a vacuum.
So yeah, that's me. I fly, let's see, I'm doing nothing for Halloween.
Me neither.
And well, I firmly believe that Halloween and New Year's are both the most disappointing holidays as a single person. Because we always glamorize them. We get excited about them. You know, maybe that kiss at midnight, if I just meet that person at the party, or I'm going to go to this little Halloween thing, and it's going to be so fun. And then you show up, and you're like, oh. Like, either you were the only one that dressed up and nobody else did, or everybody else dressed up and you didn't, or, like, you get there and everybody's dressed up and you realize that's really weird because you can't, like, you don't want to look at Dracula fangs coming out of your poor friend's with Asperger's mouth all day. And you just, I mean, it's just a terrible, terrible night, no matter how you slice it. I've never had a Halloween since I was, like, 15 that I loved.
Never. Is this really because nobody invited you to a party? Is this what this is about?
No. There's invites to party. Like, I flat out say no. And, in fact, I do the same with New Year's parties. If it's not with family or, like me and a girlfriend, I would just as soon either travel and be gone for that, which is what I frequently do, or sit at home and, like, just make it a – like, have that be my excuse to play video games all night or something. I'm not a fan wonderful. Of these holidays.
I can tell. Last year was super disappointing because it was my first Halloween married and living in an apartment complex, and kids don't show up. Nothing happens. Like, we bought candy and we were ready to pass it out to trick or treaters. Like, two kids came by the whole night. Nobody does it in apartment complexes. It was so sad.
Dude, an apartment complex, you'd make bank.
I mean, that's so, exactly. That's... Why would you not? The density? I mean, you just work your way through it. It's a way smarter idea. So much
use
candy.
Use your tracting philosophy that you've developed as a missionary and go and, like, just target the high-density door knocker.
Oh, come on. Like I ever want to have those memories again of spending all of my mission time first trying to sneak into the buildings because they were all – they always had lock codes.
Cracking the codes on the outside. Oh,
what we would always do is we would buzz a random number, and if they say sí, and we would just say abre, which is very common in Spain for people just to buzz and say open, and people just do it offhand because they assume it's somebody they know. And so that's kind of deceitful, really. But that was the common practice to try to get into a building. Keep buzzing a number until after saying abre, and sometimes they would say, who is it? And you'd be like, we're the missionaries. We have an important message about Jesus Christ. And then they just go like, well, what? No. And they hang up.
I don't know if you remember in Ukraine, we had those like 10-digit door codes. And so like on a lot of them, you'd have to push like the 4 and the 8 and the 3 at the same time.
Yeah.
And so like you get pretty good at like recognizing the shiny numbers.
The ones that are rubbed up. It's like National Treasure.
You'd be up there trying to catch just the right gleam off the sun as you or like flashlight it up so that you could figure out which ones were going to let you in, and then you're just hacking codes. It does feel really awkward though, or like sneaky. They have the door guards, and we'd try and sneak past them, like wait until they were distracted.
I know, it's just stupid.
Like, I'm in your building. I'm tracking now.
I hope the church is aware of this because not every place in the world has. Because like in Spain, for example, Spain has the highest percentage rate of people living in apartments in all of Europe, higher than any other country. And so they're very, very tight there. And so that's your mission. Like, you're just spend the whole time trying to get into buildings so you can knock doors. You don't really have any other recourse. So serving in Europe is fun for all of us. In that
oh,
sense.
Boy.
Well, I feel like I mean, you served in Europe. You served in barely Europe, but you served in Europe. And I served in a weirder part of Europe, but... We are a special band of people who only understand each other. Those of us who struggle through 2 years.
No one else knows what we've gone through.
Only fellow European missionaries understand the struggle. I have an uncle who served in France, and we get it. And my other uncle served in Germany. And we can be like, yeah, man, we know the pain. And then my other uncle served in Chile. It was just like a party for him for 2 years. Come on, Mike.
Wait, so Jeff, you like, what have you been up to this week? You've got stuff going on.
I am in Chicago right now. Chicago is my first time in Chicago, and Chicago is a wonderful city. My goodness, I have had a delightful time in this town. This, I am convinced, this is Earth's inherited celestial glory. It's Chicago.
No, I would flat out deny that.
Is what the Doctrine and Covenants is referring to.
I've been to Chicago. They have the Millennial Mile, Navy Pier, and a couple of tall buildings.
It's called the Miracle Mile.
Yeah, whatever.
And it's Millennium Park.
All right. You could see how I'd get those confused.
So, which is on Michigan Avenue, which, of course, after Millennium Park starts forming the Miracle Mile. But it's not Miracle Mile. Miracle Mile's in L.A.
Now I wish I could express how little I care about the fact that I didn't know exactly what it was called.
Anyway, I've been having a delightful time in Chicago. I'm here. My wife is traveling for work, and so we're just all... We actually started in St. Louis last week, and that was exciting. St. Louis is a city that you can tell was once really awesome and is now struggling to be awesome again. But I still... there was lots of great stuff there. We went up in the Arch. Found some cool stuff. The West, you know, the whole Forest Park is awesome, and we went to all the free galleries there, and they have a zoo, and it's a cool town. And so far, Chicago has been most excellent. This is just vacation time. We're just stopping in until we go to Milwaukee.
Woo!
Yeah! And then when we record next week and you are in Ireland, I will be in Colorado. So that will be our final stop on this journey before we eventually make our way back to D.C. So I've been having a wonderful time. We might go up the Willis Tower today. Who knows? Who knows?
So dumb. You do the dumbest stuff, by the way. Like it's nice. I mean, it's good
okay,
for Instagram.
Okay, I do dumb stuff. Dumb what places. Have I done? I've been to wonderful galleries and museums.
Yeah, the museums you go to, tacky. What were you doing in St. Louis? You had all kinds of stupid
tacky
stuff there.
What stupid stuff did I do in St. Louis? I went up the Arch, but that's just a thing you do. You go up the Arch. It's just part of the St. Louis experience.
I feel like you do a lot of things that you do. Like, that's just a thing you do, you would
say.
Well,
you go up the Arch, but what else did I do in St. Louis? I went to the art gallery in St. Louis, which is nice. I don't think that's a thing everyone does. I checked out the temple. Thank you for...
Thank you.
Destroying the love of the temple and explored some cool there. We went to the City Museum. I mean, yeah, some of these things are things that out-of-towners come and do when they're in the city. Sure, but there's some cool stuff in the town. But we found some great local places for food. That's my biggest beef. Tourist attractions are okay, but when I eat, I like to find somewhere that's legit and that's not a tourist trap. I like to find cool restaurants.
Yeah.
So you can look at the things I've done and tell me which of them have been unsatisfactory in your eyes. And
no, I'll continue to judge. Normally I leave a comment on your Instagram that says, you're a moron, or I hate you.
And then you can tell me what I should have been doing, since apparently you know.
As any good friend would, I just criticize every good thing you do.
And I did text you and say, what do you recommend in Chicago, dude? And you never responded.
Oh, I was right busy.
Yeah, well, whatever. It's your fault.
Sorry.
So don't have an opinion if you can't do something else about it. Come on.
Okay, that's fair.
Oh, my goodness. So really, if you want to make fun of anything, Milwaukee. Milwaukee's going to be exciting to try to find things to do.
Can't wait until you're in Milwaukee and I get to mock you.
Because you know I will find cool things in Milwaukee. I will find some wonderful structure with history and something about it.
Oh, my gosh, I can't wait.
It's Milwaukee.
It's going to be great. Anyway, Jeff, we've got other things, less trivial things to be discussing.
Sure. Like the Mormon issues and news and things there. First of all, thanks to everyone for hanging with us. When we published that article last week about some alleged forthcoming changes about the whole temple sealing process and marriages and stuff like that. Okay, I want to be clear about one thing. I in no way wrote that expecting it to be some sort of massive internet sensation. I'm not trying to puff myself
up here. I
like
that this is...
but no, honestly, I mean, I wrote it for our usual audience. Like, oh, this will be a thing the people who are interested will read. So thanks for hanging in there if you were trying to get on our website and it didn't load, because we actually maxed out our capacity on it and it worked out. Anyways, that was fascinating to watch because I
we're
in no way...
that, by the way.
Yeah.
But that was our biggest day traffic-wise ever over some purported rumors, which I, like, in the end, I feel like you caused the church to come out and flat out deny them. Well done, Jeff.
In some ways, I do. There's a weird part of me that feels guilty, like I did something wrong. But I, at the same time, I was merely reporting on what I'd received from other sources. So if this was something that was discussed in various temples in meetings with sealers, I would assume that would be the audience. Because why would they have a general temple worker meeting for something like this? But with sealers, I would get it. Like, hey, it's going to change. Get ready. If this all went down as has been explained to us, if they weren't supposed to say something, then blame it on them. I'm just relaying what came my way via a couple sources. But still, it's easy to feel like I was being naughty. Or like I've honestly been worried if my stake president might call me in and be like, this is behavior unbecoming of an Elder's Quorum president. We expect better of you. I don't know. I'm living in fear now. I'm living in fear. I am Kate Kelly. I'm afraid.
Well then. So anyway, a couple of things follow up on that. The church actually did come out and say we have reports of no such meetings.
Yeah, they said they were unaware of any such meetings, which I think does leave the door a little bit open for them to have still happened. You know, like, Al, I'm unaware of the fact that you got up this morning and ate breakfast.
But no, you actually saw me eat a slice of pizza from 3 days ago.
Look, I'm trying to do a Hebrews 11:6 here, okay? I have not seen the evidence. I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, the church did say
you actually literally did see it.
The church is unaware.
In fact, you saw me get up. When you called, I was still in my garments eating that three-day-old pizza. And you woke me up and I had to go get it. So all just... flat out, that was a lie, what you just said.
Yeah, you are not the human who gets to tell me that coasters are weird and finicky based on your behavior.
Yeah, I'm in my celestial smile swoop neck garbage. Like, hey, Jeff, why you live like such an animal?
But like I was saying, the church came out about that. The Herald Tribune covered it and referenced our post.
Jeff was quoted in the Herald Tribune, everybody.
I was quoted.
He's very excited.
I was quoted by name at LDS.net. If anyone can explain to me where LDS.net came from, because it's like a thing that I'd never seen in my life until the past couple of months.
LDS.net? That was a site that was around like 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, forever ago. If it's a .net especially. I'm also surprised the church hasn't tried to buy them out since they like to buy LDS.every subdomain imaginable. I'm surprised they didn't buy .net in the first place. They own .com, even though we don't use it. But... anywho, so that was fun. That was exciting. Party on. Speaking of garments, Al, and your swoop neck garments, we talked a lot about the garment video, you know, on last week's show, which we thought was great and in many ways surprising, but it was very good. But so the church did release a little update to that, though, which I thought was interesting at the newsroom. And they said they're grateful for, the coverage it got and how it's been really positively received. But they did say, quote, "One short clip used in the video came from stock footage filmed several years ago. It has just been brought to our attention that criminal charges had been brought against a church member shown in the clip. We have therefore replaced that 8-second clip with new footage, but the script, imagery, and all other aspects of the video remain unchanged." So they said they're just making this change and explanation to maintain the spirit of transparency that is the hallmark of the video, which is great. I'm just curious, like, if this was stock footage from years ago, like, does anyone care? If so, I don't know what the charges were brought against this individual. I mean, I have no idea. But I think it's pretty amazing they went out of their way to swap out 8 seconds of footage because somebody... it doesn't even say a criminal conviction. Criminal charges were brought against somebody. But it did say criminal, not civil. Criminal charges.
Ha! Well, good. I didn't know that... well, I guess that is true because didn't they look at, like... I remember when they were casting for the Testaments or the new one of the new Jesus movies that they were doing. But they were looking for the guy to play Jesus in it, and they had to go through all these weird stipulations. Like you can never have played a homosexual role in a movie before or in a play. You could never have had done a nude scene, like all that stuff, all those weird requirements. So I guess there's probably cursory stipulation to stuff like that. You can't have been convicted. You can't be a convicted felon and be in a film unless it's an I'm a Mormon campaign video. Then
you can do whatever you want.
Yeah. No holds barred.
But no, you raise. But it's interesting. You said convicted, but you know, charges doesn't mean a conviction. But it's true because I think they've learned their lessons ever since the old days when we would hire non-LDS actors. And I don't think we appreciate it. Like, you know, Legacy is famous for being full of non-LDS actors who, Legacy, is my understanding.
Wait, really? That's a thing?
The production of Legacy, in my understanding, and a big part of this could be, you know, Mormon urban legend, but it was kind of like its own E-True Hollywood story, really, because I know that the lead actress in it was later on, she was in like a late night Cinemax type film at some point.
No.
Something like that. And I believe the guy who played Joseph Smith allegedly was gay and not a member. And there were rumors of him, like, smoking on the set. There's always been a lot of stuff said about Legacy. I'm sure much of it is true. I'm sure some of it's trumped up.
I want to see that. Where's that story?
But my wife, Danielle, just reminded me. If you've looked Actually, if you just look at lesson 20 in this year's Teachings of the Presidents of the Church manual for Joseph Fielding Smith, you will see a picture of her in that in the manual in that lesson.
And, of the legacy girl?
No, not of, the, of my wife.
Oh, no one cares about that.
No, no, but this is has context because when she did this, so she did some modeling stuff for the church. It's a picture of her helping an old lady in a wheelchair grab some fruit. But they use it in the lesson for, and it's been in an Ensign before. She did it years ago when she was at the Y. But
She needed the money.
the thing every actress says at some point in her career.
I was in college. It was hard pressed for cash, and I just needed the money.
But the point is, she actually had to get. They had to go to her bishop and make sure she was a member in good standing and all that before they would even involve her in the project. So I think that comes back to what you were saying, Al. That you know, either way, they like to keep a clean slate for some reason and say that.
For some reason.
Well, that's fine. But I mean, like, I look at this stuff and I think they're actors. But I guess the church wants us to be aware that, like, no, they're not just actors. These are actual, like, believing members filming this stuff. So you have that extra allegiance to it or something. But, you know, they do. I mean, like, we know they updated one of the old temple films years ago. But that was a temple film. So I thought it was a little bit different than a regular old for the public church
movie. Uh-huh.
So there you go.
So Jeff, like, let's take a minute real quick, and I'm curious about the listener mail that we want to talk about.
Okay.
We've been meaning to do some of these for a while, but we got some interesting ones this week. So we had a couple of things on the docket. One, Jeff wrote an inflammatory post about how everybody isn't doing their talks right.
No one sent us listener mail about that, did they?
Well, I mean, just like some 50 comments on the site of people that are either saying you're an idiot or yes, absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things where as people, like, you can always tell as they're closing their talk, and you just slip into it and you say,
exactly. We slip into these things
in the name of thy son. Amen. And I mean, essentially deifying the congregation, right? We're all, but it's unintentional. It's just a mishap. So you were mocking them for that.
Right? I wasn't mocking, though. I think a lot of people who levied criticism did not read the article and, per what most studies of the internet have shown, merely read the headline and then offered their comments, which is what people do online.
Very helpful.
Because if you read it, I went out of my way to say, look, and like you said, Alec, I'm not judging here. I know people do this probably unwittingly, right? It's just a thing we do because we're not thinking about it. It just rolls off the tongue. And that's what it is. But what I'm saying is, if stuff is just rolling off our tongue and we're testifying in the name of our Lord and Savior, maybe we should take a step back and actually try to make sure we're thinking about the words that we use.
Oh, Jeff, it's like you're blessing the food and you bless it to strengthen and nourish our bodies. You don't care if it strengthens or nourishes, but it's
so don't just say that. It all goes back.
It was an accident. It was just a vain, repetitious thing that we love.
Yeah, exactly. So don't do it. Try to be more sincere when you bless your food. Try to get out. It's hard with food blessing because you wonder how much you can say, but try. Try to change it up.
Some other listener mail. Peter Fillerup, he wrote in and said that in regards to last week's conversation on marriage, as we were discussing, you know, what the potential changes could be, he said he didn't think the bishops would ever, should ever condone or participate in a gay marriage. He felt like it would be a slippery slope. And called me out on it. I mean, all right, it's fine.
Yeah, Peter's. He also says you should go to Galway, which is Western Ireland, of course.
Also, our dear friend Robert Gibbons said, noticed a great error in Jeff's rhetoric where he said, no. Santino Fontana played Hans, not Kristoff in Frozen. He's saying love is an open door, not the deer part. Jeff. I feel like I got 1,000 guys. All of our listener mail is just how you're wrong with everything.
Fair enough.
I'm sorry about that. Was there other ones that you were waiting to talk about?
Nothing big. We had a nice one from a guy. I just want to give a shout out, actually, to our listener, Jacob, who sent us a nice email basically saying that he's new to the show and he just, you know, has been listening through a couple episodes and appreciates some of the perspectives we've had on this and that. But he does say, due to his work schedule, he doesn't often get to attend church every week. And he works with a lot of extreme ex-Mormons. So it's been nice to find a podcast to listen to something that's related to the church, but still uplifting and fun and all that stuff. And then where's the second part? This is kind of a nice shout out. Nice to get letters like this from people who are finding some value in the show if it helps them, especially if they have a schedule that doesn't allow them to go to church. I love here where it says, have you ever typed Mormon into YouTube to see what garbage comes up and how long it takes to see something from the church? Or type Mormon into a search engine? First thing on Bing, and yes, Bing, I'm an anti-Googler, is xmormon.org. That's true. So
we're happy to fill some voids in all of our lives. And then a ton of great comments. I mean, this week has been a great week for comments, like in the tune of hundreds on the website. Some very interesting ones. We try to reply to them as we go and keep the conversation going. So thank you for that. As always, send us an email to talk to us this week at Mormons, or contact at thisweekatmormons.com. And we do read and appreciate them all.
And if you have individual ones for whatever reason, you can just put our names in front of at thisweekatmormons.com. But I spell my name with a G, not a J.
But then we feel lost when we're without each other.
Occasionally, I've received an email just for me, and I say, "But what about Al? What about the big guy?
What about Al?
Yeah.
So let's see. Also, big news this week was the new polygamy essays that came out. fairly substantial. You know, created some great conversations. For me, why are you laughing?
Fairly substantial. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah, it is, Jeff. It really, really is. Now, what's interesting about this, so this was, there's a three-part series. There's one about the polygamy and Joseph Smith and Nauvoo and Kirtland, the early days. Mm-hmm. There's one about polygamy, sort of the Brigham Young era, and then polygamy, the manifesto. This is a genuine effort from the church to acknowledge its past. And sort of piece together what that means for us. Obviously, it's sort of researched and presented in as good a light as possible. But it doesn't mince words. It sort of just lays the facts out there and says this is what we know, and this is sort of where the evidence points. And so do with it what you will. But we're not going to try and hide it. Or encourage you to go and find out from other sources. And so, I mean, we've talked about it a bunch before, but the idea that the church is no longer going out of its way to hide any dirty laundry, to hide anything that might make it look not squeaky clean, I think is really, really good. Because everybody that I know that struggled with church history has had some sort of a view that the church was supposed to be perfect, that... Mm-hmm. The interpretation of the gospel of Jesus Christ into a church on earth was somehow going to be without flaw. And when you have that view and you find out that, you know, Bishop Jimbo is getting his tires changed on a Sunday when he should be keeping the Sabbath day holy, you're shaken to the core. And so the more we can do to sort of talk about and have open dialogue around some of the maybe things that we view as unorthodox today, or trying to understand some of the stuff that was a little bit quirky back then, I think it does everybody a lot of good.
Totally. I think, for me, this is one of the bigger issues I've seen for those who have eventually left the church, the attrition that we see from the rooted in the internet age, you know, people finding stuff online and becoming disaffected or having questions where they don't find answers from the church about it. Like I've talked about before, Book of Abraham, I think, has always been a big one, and they've written a post about that. And not just polygamy, but Joseph Smith and polygamy, I think, has always been one of the higher ones that has rocked people's boats quite a bit.
And what did you do when you heard that Joseph Smith had a polygamous wife who was 15 years old? I mean, you immediately like, no.
Yeah, you think, no. Or you'd maybe kind of try to sweep it under the rug and say, it's kind of weird, I don't get it, but I don't want to let it bury me or take me away from the church, which is what even I've done. Because even I've said, look, my view has always been, I think there's some weird stuff out there, and I don't doubt the veracity of any of these things. But I also don't understand everything, and I've also had, you know, spiritual witness about the truth of things. So I'm just going to soldier on and keep doing what I can do and hope for the best. And so I think this is a step. Of course, this doesn't encapsulate everything involving polygamy in any for all the church. But
it's a good primer on some
steps.
Of the So I mean, just to sort of address that stuff a little bit, right it's easy for us to look at polygamy and a lot of it, I mean, a lot of similar rhetoric to blacks in the priesthood, right? Where we have social norms now and we hold our church from 150 years ago to the same standard that we hold the church to today, so far as civil rights and things of that nature, and expecting that to be the same priority. And maybe it didn't, and it obviously didn't. And I mean, that sort of upsets us a little bit. Well, so polygamy is another one of those things where, you know, imagine being Joseph Smith and getting the revelation that you're supposed to institute polygamy. He says that he received it from an angel three times, and on the third time, the angel appeared with a sword and was threatening to destroy him if he didn't live the or obey the law that God was commanding him. And so, like, you're given this command to live the law of polygamy, which is based primarily around the idea of living the law of consecration, right? Like, the church is being primed for a sort of all things equal among us sort of way of life. And so polygamy becomes one of those. One of the essays on it sort of talks specifically about the economical benefits or ramifications of polygamy, where you have, you know, your poor widows are married into middle-class families, and then you don't have poor widows anymore. You have just bigger middle-class families. So, I mean, as you're given that commandment to institute it, I feel like I can look at a lot of the you know, the results of that and say, okay, well, I understand, you know, I understand the well-intentioned stab at this. And then I also understand that, you know, a lot of it was probably implemented wrong. And that's the way that the Lord often works with us, as he says, here's the thing. And he doesn't slap us on the hand as we go. He lets us make a mistake, and then we fix it, and then we fix it, and then we fix it. And like, that's just the way that stuff works. Yeah. So,
well, and the other key thing to remember with it wasn't just the temporal benefits, but it was the fact that it was viewed as providing exalting ordinances to everyone. And it's not to say the important thing here, though, is not that there were that women outnumbered men by, you know, by 3 or 4 to 1, right? So it was a necessity. It was just done honestly to try to raise more children, as it says in the essay, raise more children under the guidance, under the help of righteous parents, and to raise them unto the gospel. When I read that part, it got me thinking, because I look back, I mean, I'm a whatever generation polygamist heritage, whatever I am, but my grandma, you know, was raised in a polygamous household. She was from the fourth wife of Anson Bowen Call in the colonies in Mexico. But the funny thing I see is how seriously it seems these families took their faith, even if this was like totally post-manifesto stuff, right? I mean, my grandma was born in 1925 or something like that. So, but what I see, though, is I see this whole family, this Call family today, still does a family reunion every year to honor him, and all descendants from all four wives will get together. And you see that, by and large, this is this massive family where, like, everyone has been raised in the gospel, and they're pretty much all active. It's actually very interesting for me to see. I'm not saying that polygamy is the gateway to righteous, you know, family or anything like that. But if that was a purpose of it, I can see that in my own ancestors, in the ways they've kind of had this proud Call family stock, in the way they've lived the gospel and raised their families accordingly. It's pretty interesting.
I mean, a lot of people come from that good pioneer heritage, you know, pioneer stock, so to speak. Let me highlight some of the things that are interesting in here. So we all, I mean, this is a part of our history we all have to sort of reconcile with, that we are a church that has a polygamous past. We do not now, but it is part of where we came from. Now, Joseph Smith did, in fact, marry, who was it, Heber Kimball's daughter, who was quite young, a few months before her 15th birthday, so she was technically 14, and the paper is like, hey, listen, that seems crazy now. At the time, that was fairly common to marry at a young age, and she writes later that it was for eternity, which they make a distinction. Rather than being married for time and all eternity, if you're married for eternity, you're sealed to Joseph in the next life. And I can't find a citation for this, but I seem to remember somewhere reading that in the early days of the church, a lot of the sealings that would happen in the temple, you were sealed to Joseph Smith as the head of the dispensation. Sort of that was the understanding that they had on how the sealings worked, and that's what they were supposed to do. And it was later that was sort of clarified, and now we're sealed to in family units. Now again, I don't have a source for that, so don't take me to the mill on there. But this seemed to be something that was fairly common back in the day, as we were trying to understand what we were sealing ourselves to and what the sealing power was telling us or needed to be done in us, or however we need to say that. So the context, of course, is that it wasn't a sexual relationship. It wasn't that he had a bunch of women with whom he was sexually active, though it does go on to say there were a number that Emma was aware about, that, you know, he talked with her about, and that he was actually in a full-on polygamous relationship with after getting that revelation. And so, I mean, there's some stuff in there that if you aren't familiar with some of the history of our church, it's meaningful to take a minute and read through and sort of digest it. And for me, honestly, where I keep going back to is I'm like, man, these guys weren't perfect, right? And so, you know, as they try to interpret revelation and put it into play and do what they think is the will of God and then find out later that it wasn't. I love Bruce R. McConkie's comment after he made all the sort of comments about blacks and the priests and how that would never happen. And then the revelation happens and he says it was as though a light bulb had been turned on. It was as though a light went on and everything, like I saw everything differently. And so, you know, as we're trying to do the will of the Lord and put it together, often further revelation helps illuminate some of that. And so we can't hold, we can't hold them accountable to everything. There's also a great quote of another gal who Joseph Smith approached, and this is in the history of the church. If you want the reference, I can find it. But a gal that was approached by Joseph Smith to go into a polygamous relationship with him, and she said, "I would rather go to hell a virtuous woman than to heaven a whore." And I kind of love that quote. Right? It's just like a ballsy woman that's like, "No, screw that! I don't want to be involved in that." And there's no repercussions or anything that happens from saying no to that. It was clearly by invitation. Not by commandment to engage in some of that stuff.
Well, that's sort of the interesting thing.
Interesting fodder, right?
Is that the polygamy was a commandment, and of course it was a small percentage of the saints ever lived it at any given time.
About 30 people were living the commandment of polygamy at the time of Joseph's death. About 200 by the time Brigham Young got everybody out to
the valley.
The valley, yeah.
But so that's important to remember. But also, how they said you were still a perfectly good member in good standing if you didn't get into it. So I wonder where that line was as far as the commandments to engage in it. Because I think it was—is it in the essay? What, Heber C. Kimball, I think, who was really uncomfortable with the whole thing. Like, you read these essays, some of the brethren are sitting there saying, like, "Oh my gosh, it's like the worst thing imaginable. Like, I don't want to do this. I'd rather die."
Some of it, I mean, all of it was by invitation only. It was by you
know, it's like a new Google app. It's really
it's like inbox. Yeah. Well, or I mean, rather you should say by commandment.
Sure.
Where Joseph would call somebody or Brigham would call somebody to it, and there were other men that were the sort of the dirty pervs of their generation that were engaging in spiritual wifery, where they were sort of taking that on themselves and saying, "Hey, I'm supposed to have 1,000 of you." And which I mean, in large part was responsible for the big black eye of polygamy that it ended up getting.
For me, just to, I don't want to backtrack too much, but one thing I really liked was explaining a bit more about marriage for time and marriage for time and all eternity, which was something I just wasn't really aware of beforehand. And so, because one of the things I've always heard people cite is that, you know, Joseph, and even the media has jumped on it, of course. If you look at any articles from the mainstream press about this, all they say is Mormon Church admits that founder was married to a 14-year-old girl. Like, that's, of course, what their big takeaway. But that's one of those things that gets people and makes them uncomfortable, because it makes Joseph Smith seem like he's some sort of, like, pedophile or something along those lines. But when you understand that there is time and time in all eternity, time in all eternity, you realize that a lot of these marriages were only for eternity, where this was Joseph Smith getting sealed to women for the afterlife, and he then had no other association with them, really.
How jacked up would that be to be the husband? And Joseph's like, hey, fist bump right here. You got her on earth, but dibs in heaven. You forgot to call that one.
And that part is still a little bit weird, because it wasn't like it's funny, because the church article mentions, you know, that he was potentially sealed to a few women who had husbands who were not active. But I don't think it really mentions that there were four women who were married to members of men in good standing in the church And Joseph still got sealed to him anyway. It does seem that Joseph was a little cavalier, perhaps, in his implementation of...
Well, again, right? Go live this commandment. You've never seen it lived before, ever. Interpret the best you can.
Yeah.
Right? Like have a little bit of context for that. The other thing that I really liked in the essay was sort of the conundrum that put Emma in. And they talked about that quite a bit. And they were like, hey, listen, this was not easy. And in fact, that was sort of the major thing for her following Joseph's death was, I mean, that was her beef with Brigham. That was something that she really, really struggled with. And she kind of goes back and forth in being in support of and completely flat out against polygamy, which, again, you know, wife of the prophet or not, you have a lot of empathy for what she had to go through there and trying to sort of understand and discern. And like, that was a big trial that a lot of those people were asked to go through. And I mean, I wonder what the expectation is in us of, you know, perfection out of our prophets, right?
Yeah.
Like perhaps, and I'm sorry if this is bad to say, but I wonder if Joseph Smith wasn't 95% on target with stuff, and he had 5% where he was just like completely screwing up what God was trying to do, you know, like completely screwing up.
Oh, Al, there is no precedent in the scriptures for prophets messing up like that. What are you talking about?
Well, there's not a lot of. Well, and maybe you can remind me of some, but there's not a lot of where prophets are screwing up and they continue to be prophets in good standing. And so I think
that's true.
And so I think we have a little bit of a perfection complex in the idea that if a prophet sinned, that they would be immediately taken out or whacked.
No, and I don't think they would. I think the key thing is that a prophet doesn't lead the church astray. That's sort of the promise we have with prophets. And then if we follow the prophet, we will be blessed and we will be on the right course. But it doesn't say that prophets are perfect or, like you said, make the right choice and implements as they're supposed to.
And I wonder if in the context of the early days of the church, if we were okay with you know, 10 steps forward and one step back, so to speak.
And
you can see, I mean, the polygamy is removed and simplified, and like the idea of the law of consecration is taken away from the saints and sort of held for another time when we're more righteous people with better understandings of I like there's a lot of this stuff that's sort of the grand vision was revealed, and then that's tried to be implemented right away, and maybe before we were ready, or I don't know I may just be making excuses for some of this.
No, okay.
I don't know.
But it's one thing I've seen. Some people have even seen these essays, and they really still want the church to take that extra step and just totally disavow polygamy. Because this is more explanatory. Like, this is what happened in our history. But nowhere does it say, we believe polygamy is wrong, for one, and we don't do it. All it says is, we don't practice polygamy anymore. And if you do, you get excommunicated from the church. But I don't think the church will ever disavow polygamy. But the essays do make the point that men can still be sealed to multiple women as far as the afterlife and everything goes. And so that'll be interesting to see. But I don't think the church would ever disavow polygamy. I see polygamy as part of the long-term game. I do. I think we don't. And even when you read about the manifesto, it's what had to happen at the time, and it's a blessing. But I think we've gotten rid of it because it doesn't fit with our Western model at this point. So I don't know what'll happen in the long run, but I don't think this is necessarily the church bending to the will of society, but I think it was a result of needing to do what it had to do to survive. Because you see the revelation that was received with the first and especially the second manifesto, that was that Woodruff or Snow who had the vision about, you know, I saw what would happen. I saw that they would take away our temples, they would seize our property, and all of our important work would be taken away because we will not budge on polygamy. And so the Lord permitted polygamy and to go away. And it took a while. I mean, even after the second manifesto, which really told people to cut it out in the States, it still went on in Canada and Mexico. Like, that's why I'm here, for example. And I can honestly say I'm grateful for polygamy because I was from the fourth wife. So if it didn't exist, who knows if I would exist or not, you know?
But, well, you wouldn't have those weird cross-eyed and unibrow things.
Yeah, sure. That's the German side in me. But...
Anyway, so this is one of those things that I mean, it makes a lot of people uncomfortable to talk about, but this is part of our past, and you know, so sort of digest it a little bit, stew on it, come to your own understanding of how that fits in things. Again, like Jeff said, I mean, it's a good thing to continue to go back and say, here's the things that I do know, here's what I can control, you know, and I like. I've had distinct spiritual experiences around X, Y, and Z, and I believe this. The rest of this stuff, maybe I don't understand exactly how all this filters out until heaven, right? Until the next life. But I do know what I know, and the church is true. The gospel is pure and good, and the church that we have is pretty darn good as well, though not perfect, and not ever claimed to be perfect.
Not perfect, and it's not always going to be perfect. But these are good essays, and these are ones I would feel, if you have people who have questions, I mean, I refer them to these. I think they're very interesting, and they explain a lot, and they can dispel a lot of rumors, and they can provide a lot more context for what we hear about.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's see. We're already running so long on the show. Well, the church put out a video about suicide prevention and depression, which I thought it's merely just a mention, but it's definitely good to watch. And my big takeaway from it is that I like to see the church proactively engaging in these issues, recognizing that not just outside of its ranks, but within its ranks, it's a real issue. I think we used to see stuff like, hey, if you deal with depression, the gospel will give you hope and make everything okay. You know, it's kind of a potential missionary opportunity while trying to work on mental health issues. Whereas now I think we're able to say, Mormon or not, these are real issues and they exist in and out of our own ranks. And we need to be sensitive about them and do our best to help our brothers and sisters who deal with these issues. They even get, who's in the video? Oh, I'm blanking on his name. He's one of these sort of prominent blogger guys now. I can't remember his name.
Who are you talking about?
Oh, he's in the video. He's in the video. I forgot. It's Alex something. He's the one who wrote the blog that said, like,
Frank?
I didn't love my wife when I got married. It's not Matt Walsh. Not that guy. He's dumb. But anyway, it's just...
Rod?
People have very real experiences, and I think it's
nice. You're thinking of Fred.
I don't know who Fred is.
Maybe Ray Williams Jr.?
Sure.
That's probably it.
Anyway, good video, good to watch, inspirational stuff. Give it a watch. Well, we'll post it on the on our website with the post for the show. We'll embed it on there so you can watch it.
Great, great. Amazing. Let's see, some other interesting things going on. We'll just do a few mentions. The teens... or the people that vandalized the church.
Allegedly vandalized the church.
Look at the mugshots. They definitely...
Allegedly is the greatest word. You can use the word allegedly and legally never get into trouble for anything. It's amazing.
They have two teenagers that allegedly hit the church in Duchesne County. So those boys look like they need to go to scouts more, maybe. I think that's all I have out of that. And then also there was a BYU-Idaho shooting threat, which is a little bit nerve-wracking. I mean, that's a weird school to have trouble at, but the cops took care of it. It was just a threat that was made by a student.
Yep.
They took it very seriously, which, good.
They do take it seriously. Back to those teens. One of their charges was criminal mischief. That's interesting. Just got charged with mischief.
Yeah, that's carryover from our days in England.
I guess so. I'm glad nothing became of the
Oliver
shooting.
Oliver Twistiness.
And the sad thing, I'm glad this BYU-Idaho thing was just a threat and one they just extinguished and took seriously and took care of. But in light of how many shootings we keep having in the States and schools, it really made me think. I was like, man, what if someone ever went crazy and started shooting up BYU? Like, I would see it being some kind of Mormon fundamentalist type who thinks the church is losing.
Let's be honest, though. If ever there was going to be a school shooting, don't do it in Idaho. Everybody there is packing guns.
That's also a good point.
There is some serious firearm stuff going on up there. Those people take their guns serious.
Yeah, they do. In other quick news, both the Salt Lake Tribune and the Deseret News published articles recently about how most people in Utah do favor two Salt Lake City or Utah-wide daily newspapers. So that's good to see.
Irrelevant. Don't care.
Well, no, this has been a big deal because of the church's relationship with the Salt Lake Tribune. If people have been wondering if the Tribune could eventually go away, leaving it with one newspaper in the market, just the Deseret News, which in my opinion is never good for any market. I think it's always good to have at least two newspapers because they often balance each other out from a from the points of view that they offer up. But they did say if it has to be only one, then most people favor it being Deseret News. So there you go.
Okay, still don't care.
Okay, fair enough.
So Pope Francis, this isn't directly Mormon, but I like it for the talking points, came out this week and talked about how the Big Bang Theory is real. He believes in evolution and says that God is not a magician with a magic wand, as the headline states. It's made some ripples, understandably, because his predecessors have said that that's not the case. I kind of like it because I feel like in a large part, the Mormon Church has sort of shifted over. Well, I hope it's shifting over to sort of incorporating in the role of like a Big Bang or something of that nature in the creation. Evolution could certainly play a role in like God's creation story, so to speak. In fact, I mean, it's just sort of interesting because for a long time we have in our head how a lot of this is, and I mean, there's even we have people from back in the day, apostles that have denounced evolution flat out. Yeah, but then yeah. as we begin to understand more and more what the role of evolution is and how it works, it fits. I mean, it fits with theology. Even to the point like evolution indirectly, right? Like the idea that Adam and Eve may be like, and this may be complete heresy, but hear me out. Like what if an Adam and Eve weren't necessarily the first people, so to speak, but they were rather, it was like at the point where humans had evolved, where they had reasonable or sort of accountability, right? The idea of an 8-year-old being accountable at 8, the idea of the human race evolving to a certain point and then being accountable, and that was sort of more of a matter. I feel like I'm speaking a lot of like random heresy with, well, like maybe someday bishops can do can perform gay weddings and stuff, and maybe Adam and Eve wasn't necessarily the first people, and what if the world was more than 6,000 years old, like a lot of this stuff. I mean, this is, understand that this is like my brain sort of sorting through a lot of the facts as they come in and saying, all right, well, how can I fit this into all the other things that I know, and how can everything mesh? And it's not a perfect understanding. This isn't canon doctrine or even doctrine in any variation of that term. But it is, I mean, it's just something that I'm actively thinking about and trying to understand. Yeah. So.
Well, I like it. I like that I think in our church even though we have denounced evolution, which is, I feel like denouncing evolution was such a product of the mid-1900s, just in the wake of blanking on the name
Ross
of the
Perot.
No, I'm, yeah, Ross Perot. I'm blanking on the name of the court, the Scopes monkey trial, you know, all that kind of stuff. I feel like we've always had an anti-evolutionary bent in religious communities because of that. So it's great that Catholics are getting that from their leader, but I think that Mormon theology is wonderful because we don't definitively say what's what. We're clear that there were 6 creative periods, not necessarily, you know, days, literal days. And I don't know where to go with your Adam and Eve remarks, Al, but it did make me think that maybe man evolved up to a point. And at that point was when God said, okay, man has evolved into man. We've created man, but man still does need to receive awareness and the breath of life, as it says.
I feel like we're going to get a lot of emails over this.
I'm trying to at least give you some credit here. I don't know.
I'm not holding too any of this, but it's something that I continue to stew about. I mean, it doesn't have to be real. It's just something that in my head is a way that I'm sort of making sense. I agree with you, Jeff. I agree with you that one of the great things of our gospel is that it doesn't come out and say, hey, fools, this is how you need to think. It says, here's everything we got. Now discern that and distill it down into something.
We believe in all that God has revealed, and we believe that he will reveal many other great and important things. One of our
We as a church have a tendency to like feel very, very confident in some of our assumptions. Yeah. And so I like the idea too that I mean, we're okay with just like, well, we'll do the best we can, and then in the end, we'll figure it all out. Everything will explain itself.
Yeah, I mean, it does. It was funny because I was actually in the Field Museum yesterday, and they had a bit on sort of the lifespan of the Earth, and it went with the, you know, the pure science model. So you're, you know, billions of years ago and stuff, working through dinosaurs, and finally get to an exhibit when it says like man, and so you see the, you know, the monkeys evolving, but it made me think about this. It's kind of funny the timing for all this sort of stuff. And I kind of joked. Yeah. I was just like, Danielle, we came from monkeys. What is this? And I don't know. I do believe. I do believe that we are created in God's image. I think that's one of the most important things that we have theologically.
Absolutely.
But it's good to remember.
But again, the idea that evolution and the Big Bang theory and all that stuff, like God is not a magician with a magic wand. He organizes matter, right? He organizes it, and he sets it on a track to achieve his purposes. And he sets planets in motion to achieve his... I mean, like, all of this stuff is something that was done with purpose, though it was not done by pulling off a sheet and saying, ta-da!
Yeah. Well, because the creation wasn't something out of nothing. The creation was taking the materials available. And then
I wonder if dinosaurs were just, like, a product of some other planet's... thing. And then he's like... Then he pulls in planet... Then he pulls in planet matter. Was like, aha! Oh shoot! All that dinosaur.
No, I people have said that one for like hardcore creationists. I'm just a believer that personal belief that one of the creative periods when animals were put on the earth that actually encapsulates that entire those massive epics with dinosaurs.
And then God was like, and boom, an asteroid, and I killed everything. He's like, ah, shoot. Control Z? No. Well, freak.
Where's my control Y?
I guess I got to make more animals again. Screw the dinosaurs. Those guys were jerks.
That's how I've always viewed it. I think the actual scientific data is fine. And yeah, I think that period of animals and things growing out of the earth just lasted for a really long time. I mean, that's okay. That's fine. Whatever. Things did evolve in one way or another.
Anyway, all right, a couple more quick mentions before we get out of here. We're going long.
Yeah, here, let me do my quick one here. I love this post by Common Consent about, it's called, if you like trunk or treats, you probably don't have a testimony, which is awesome. Yeah, I will agree. Trunk or treats have kind of jumped the shark in church culture. We do them all over the place.
Trunk or treats are great.
Trick or treats, but trunk or treats, it's like everyone...
No, y'all go to the ward building and open up your trunks and kids got to go get candy. That's free candy, man.
I understand. Yeah, but that's the problem. And they still go trick or treating. The original point of a trunk or treat was honestly, when we had all those scares in the early 90s with kids getting Halloween candy with like syringes in it and stuff like that, everyone said, oh my gosh, I can't take my kids out in public. It's too scary. So people started doing trunk or treats saying, hey...
So they dressed up as Dracula. Yeah. And then went to people's trucks.
So they said, your ward is a safe place. So let's have the kids walk around the parking lot. And that's how they do their trick-or-treating. Somehow that's – trick-or-treating, I feel like, is safer now in general. And we still do the trunk-or-treat. It's just a thing. Why not just have it – like in my ward, we struggled with this because for some reason they put the elders quorum in charge of a lot of it. Don't get me started on the dissolution of the activities committee, which I'm all for like divine interpretation and we're guided by a prophet, but like I do not understand getting rid of the activities committee. I may go to my grave never understanding getting rid of the activities committee.
The Lord will never reveal.
And he might not. Like that's one of these things when once I get to the other side, I'm going to be like, why did we do this? This just made it made
right,
a hard...
So why do you hate the
I don't personally hate the trunk or treats, but I think the problem is it takes what could be a ward Halloween party and by default turns it into a primary activity. Unless,
that's all you want out of it anyway.
Unless the ward is proactive enough to make it a ward Halloween party. And so we were in charge of...
High priest group leaders in weird-looking outfits? That's not for me.
So we were in charge of a lot of this year. The primary kind of ran the trunk or treat, but that was the problem. All the branding with it. Everything was like, it's the ward trunk or treat. And we would say, no, guys, we're going to have activities for adults. There's going to be... This is like a ward function. Because when you make it just a regular... you know, trunk or treat for kids, half the ward doesn't show up because they don't care. Like if it was just a trunk or treat and I didn't have kids and I was not in the calling I'm in right now, which would, you know, I couldn't be there anyway because I'm out of town. But, you know, if I didn't have to have any any role in it, why would I go to a trunk or treat? You know, there'd be no point in it for me. So I don't have a, I'm not, there's nothing wrong with trunk or treats in and of themselves, but when they replace the concept of a broader ward activity that could be good for everybody, then I think that's a problem. That's all. Mm. Move on.
Okay. Let's see. What else we got? We've got...
Do the Tog and Prince. That one's good.
Oh, yeah. This will be our last... Or we got two more. Okay. So, yeah, the Tog and... There's a... Let me pull it up here. So the king of Tonga sends troops and the prime minister to stop his son from being baptized in the Mormon church.
Hardcore.
Now, yeah, pretty dramatic stuff. Apparently, he did not like the idea that changing religions would hurt him. I love the in the comments section, seriously, man, my dad just sends me a text when he's mad at me. But, like, imagine getting troops sent at you. Kind of crazy. Then the other one that we need to talk about, take the crown. The Royals playing the World Series tonight. Take the crown.
Oh, that's the one we need to talk about.
Jeremy Guthrie at a World Series sort of press event took the time to tell a little bit of his story of serving a mission and giving up baseball.
In Spain, mind you. He served his mission in Spain.
And he lives in Kansas City, Jeff, so he's dear to all of us.
He's wonderful.
But kind of, I mean, a great video, great little spot on... taking the opportunity to share a little bit of the gospel and a way of doing it tactfully without being overbearing. Good work, Jeremy Guthrie. Well done.
I'd like to do two quick last ones before we go. If you remember that live, basically a Reddit AMA for Mormons that they did with David Archuleta a few months ago, another one now will have Lindsay Sterling, Al's future wife. She will be there to talk
about. Jeff, I would need three of her to make one wife.
About her.
I'm enormous.
And lastly, at one of these Time Out for Women events, which Deseret Book puts on, I've attended one before, which I've talked about when I used to work at Deseret Book. Noelle Pikus-Pates gets up there with Sherry Dew, and they do sort of a minute to win it type thing. So if you want to see Sherry Dew arm wrestling with Noelle Pikus-Pates and somehow winning, defying the laws of physics and leverage.
No, she has mom strength. That's a real thing. And also she...
Sherry's never been a mom, though. Sherry's never had kids. She has no mom strength. That's impossible. Sherry is a 60-year-old woman versus an Olympic silver medalist. Who do you think's really going to win that arm wrestling event? I think Noelle...
the silver medalist.
Noelle did it just to be nice. Let's be honest here. That's okay. But the...
You don't beat grandma. No one puts grandma in the corner. No. Anyway, great show, Jeff.
That's it.
What a delightful time. Everybody, send us an email, contact at This Week in Mormons, or visit us at thisweekinmormons.com. We will be upgrading the site in the next few weeks so we can continue to handle all of your referrals, traffic, and excitement. Stay with us.
Yeah, and go to facebook.com/thisweekinmormons. Find us at The Real Twim on Twitter. Find us on Instagram, on every other outlet you can find. And please look for our other podcasts, Third Hour of Power and Sunday School Bonanza. We'd appreciate it. We thank you for taking the time. Al, have a good time. I'll talk to you when you're in Ireland, I guess.
Shoots, cuz.
That's not what they say.